You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and join us today are Drs. Louise Greenspan and Juliana Deardorff. Dr. Greenspan is a clinical pediatric endocrinologist focusing on puberty and a leader in the field. She works at Kaiser Permanente and is on the faculty at UC San Francisco. Dr. Deardorff is a licensed clinical psychologist and a researcher with expertise in pubertal development and adolescent health, and she's also on the faculty, but she's on the faculty at UC Berkeley. Ladies, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having us.
The name of the book is The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. How did you come about tackling that topic? Were you starting to get questions from perhaps your students or your patients, or how did this come about, ladies?
Well, this is Louise Greenspan. It started for me as a clinical pediatric endocrinologist or a kids hormone doctor when I started seeing more and more girls with early puberty that I could find no underlying medical problem. And at the same time, some research came out suggesting that girls were going through puberty earlier. And several years later, Julie and I had the opportunity to be involved in several research studies looking at girls' pubertal development through time. And these studies are showing that definitively that girls really are starting earlier and that it's very, very normal for 7-year-old girls to have breast development and pubic hair.
It's interesting in the book at the beginning where you talk about this little girl, Isabel, that she notices a bump. I think it's on her left breast. And is it unusual for a young lady to have experienced that, a child at that age?
No, it's not unusual. What we have seen in our research is that at age 7, 25% of African-American girls are showing breast development, 15% of Hispanic girls, 10% of white girls, and just 2% of Asian-American girls. So we are seeing a significant proportion of girls that do have breast development at age 7.
And whereas just, you know, not long ago, any development before age 8 was considered abnormal, and those girls would be referred to Louise to try to figure out what was wrong.
And what about the young ladies when they're going through this? How does this affect them and perhaps even a relationship with their family? Because dad might be worried all of a sudden, like, okay, my little girl is showing signs of being a young lady now, and she's still a little girl.
Well, I think it's really important to kind of understand what puberty means. So oftentimes in the non-medical arena, we think about puberty as being getting your first period or menstruation. And actually, that happens quite late in the process. So the early markers of puberty that we're describing, just the very early signs of breast development, pubic hair development, are actually really not visible much to the outside world. They're a direct manifestation of kind of hormonal things that are going on in the body, but it isn't until a little later that people start to notice what's happening. But you're absolutely right. When those more observable signs of puberty, things that people can see, are happening at earlier ages, parents are concerned, and one of the big issues is that people start treating that girl differently. So if she's young and she has, say, the brain of a 8-year-old, but her body looks far older. The concern is that people might have different expectations of her and start treating her like an older girl, even though she doesn't necessarily have the social skills or the cognitive capability treated that way.
We're speaking with Drs. Louise Greenspan and Juliana Deardorff. They are the authors of The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. Ladies, we just talked about the expectations that people might have. What about, I want to say, the negative side of that, because they may look older, and there are, unfortunately, some men out there who may look at this little girl and think of her as an older young lady.
So I think we have to be careful about leaping from the first stages of puberty on directly to sexuality, because for the first couple years, these 7- and 8-year-old girls still look young. They may not look like they're 7, but they don't look like young women. I think that the age that starts occurring with early developers is after, say, 11 or 12. And I think we have to remind parents that they need to be empowered to let their daughters know what's appropriate for their family in terms of behavior, in terms of media exposure, and in terms of the way that they dress. And parents have more control than they realize. And we wrote this book to really empower parents to help their daughters make the good decisions to protect them.
You talk about how parents, as you just mentioned, and teachers and professionals who work with children, need more advice on how to talk about the physical changes and the sex, and they require a host of skills that will require them to help these young ladies and for them to know what's going on with their bodies. And so their identity is involved with all this. And mentioned in your book that a lot of times these talks don't even involve the talk about the birds and the bees.
So yeah, at very early ages, what's kind of interesting is that if girls are going through puberty early, the one nice thing is that they're still often very close to their parents during that time. They haven't yet gone through the real big shifts toward wanting to listen more to their peers than to their parents yet. So you still have a captive audience. You still have their attention. And I think if you're comfortable talking about their changing bodies and the ways they're developing, you have an opportunity, the perfect opportunity, to really start those conversations early, long before they're thinking about sexuality or sex. One example is one of the very first signs of puberty is body odor. And that precedes a lot of the other changes like breast development. So Louise can speak a little bit to that.
Yeah, the body odor conversation is a really great place to start because I don't think it's intimidating for most people. And 6 and 7-year-old girls think talking about stinky armpits is kind of funny. And they don't go places in their mind that we might necessarily go. A lot of kids have smelly armpits way before they have any other signs of puberty. So it's a great place for a parent, either gender or an auntie or uncle or grandparent or even close family friend, to be able to talk to the kid and say, hey, as we get older, we all get smelly armpits. It's normal. It's healthy. And this is what you need to do. And the parent, the mom, the dad can even show the child how to properly wash under their armpits and to explain that they have to do that every single day. And I like that place as a starter because it's not intimidating. It doesn't leap to places that parents may feel uncomfortable. Most of us are pretty comfortable with our armpits as a part of our body. And it also tells that child, sends the message that you are a person that they can come to discuss things with their bodies. And I think it's really important that you start having that conversation early and you open up those lines of communication and the child knows that there are several adults in their lives who they should feel comfortable talking to.
We are speaking with Drs. Louise Greenspan and Juliana Deerdorf, the authors of the book, The New Puberty. Dr. Greenspan is a clinical pediatric endocrinologist focusing on puberty and leader in the fields, and she is on the faculty also at UC San Francisco. Dr. Deerdorf is on the faculty of UC Berkeley, and she's a licensed clinical psychologist and researcher with expertise in pubertal development. Ladies, as far as what you just talked about, odor and body odor, does this happen also to the boys?
Yes, it does. So for all of the kids, so body odor isn't necessarily a sign of, quote, true puberty, but it's a harbinger that puberty will be starting in the next couple years. And it is often the first sign of any of the body changes in boys and in girls. And that's why it's a really great place for parents to start having that discussion.
Let's go back a little bit. You mentioned in your book that when girls enter puberty, they usually fall into two categories. You mind going over those for us?
Do you mean the two ways that puberty can start?
Yes, ma'am.
So puberty, in the old days when I was in training, I was taught that puberty always started with breast development, and we used to think that that was the first sign of pubertal development. Now we're seeing that more and more girls are starting with pubic hair as their first sign, especially the girls that are overweight. They are more likely to get pubic hair as the first sign of pubertal development, but it's a little bit confusing because just having pubic hair doesn't necessarily mean you're in puberty, so it's a little bit of a confusing area, and I think if parents are in doubt, they should really check in with their pediatrician and get their pediatrician's opinion based on a physical exam. Either way, children are starting puberty anywhere between age 7 and 10 to 11 at this point with either pubic hair or breast development.
A lot of why we wrote this book was to give parents, arm parents, with a bunch of information before they even walk into that visit with the pediatrician. So we provide a checklist about when it's probably time to go see a doctor, and when you go to the doctor, what kinds of questions you might want to ask.
I'm glad you brought that up, because my next question was going to be, at what point does a parent start talking to the child so that the child doesn't freak out, I guess if you want to use their terms, because, you know, if they have that first period and mom's not around, or, you know, they're by themselves or they're with their friends, they're going to be embarrassed, and they're also going to be scared if they haven't heard anything about it.
Yes, I think it's important to note that there's a lot of signs that puberty is starting long before the period comes. Getting your first period happens quite late in the pubertal process, so there's so many opportunities prior to that first period to start talking to your daughter about what's coming down the pike. And so if parents can arm themselves with some language that they feel comfortable using, and we've tried to provide some of that language in the book, they can actually prepare their girls very well for that upcoming transition so that girls aren't surprised by it and they know what to do. And so Louise and I really feel like by the time you've started that conversation years before, it's pretty easy to show your daughter, you know, where the products are, how to use them, those kinds of things, without having the daughter, you know, experience a lot of grief when that time comes. And we hear stories, part of this is we've heard stories from previous generations where adult women have said, I had no idea this was coming. And so we really feel it's important that girls are made aware far earlier in a way that's really non-threatening.
We're speaking with Dr. Louise Greenspan and Dr. Juliana Deardorff. They are the authors of The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. In your book, you guide us through this whole area of puberty and the background, and you talk about the generation and how it's changed and the different marks that have been made by doctors. And one of the ones that you mentioned is Marsha Herman Gittens. So tell us about her research and her observations.
So, yeah, Marsha Herman Gittens was really a revolutionary in this field. She started out initially as a physician's assistant who was helping out with children who were victims of sexual abuse. And she saw that children that were victims of this seemed to be in puberty earlier. So what she and others discovered is that it wasn't that the girls were going through puberty early and then developing being victims of sexual abuse. It seemed that they were victims of sexual abuse first and then started going through puberty earlier. So this has led to a whole area of research, both in pubertal development, but also on the psychological triggers that can cause girls to go through puberty earlier. And we now know that there's a whole wealth of research. So Marsha Herman Gittens was the first author on a very landmark paper that came out in 1997, which first brought up the data showing that kids as early as 7 were having pubertal development. So she's definitely a leader in the field, and we do reference her, and we interviewed her and spoke with her at length for this book. I do think it speaks to the psychological risk factors of puberty starting earlier. And Julie, maybe you can speak a little bit more about that.
Sure. So, you know, the three main culprits that we outline in the book as potential determinants of earlier puberty in girls are obesity, which we know as girls have gotten more and more overweight in our country. The age at puberty has accelerated a lot, has gotten younger and younger. The other thing that is being explored a lot right now in research is environmental culprits or exposures, so kind of chemicals in the environment that mimic hormones in the body. And the third one that's lesser known and that Louise is referring to are psychosocial stressors that might occur in early life for the girls and how that can also trigger puberty to start earlier.
We're visiting with Drs. Louise Greenspan and Juliana Deardorff. They are the authors of The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. When you talk about the environment, you talk about, you know, what they do when they go to school, the hours, the sleep, what they eat. A lot of times, as you mentioned, you mentioned obesity, but this is not necessarily the fact that all young girls are obese, but that is a big problem along with diabetes. And the fact that there are a lot of these foods out there that are being processed, some that have a lot of hormones. Does this have something to do with it, doctors?
When we look at obesity, there's two factors. The main one is that obesity itself, the fat tissue, makes estrogen from other hormones. And estrogen is the main female hormone and the main hormone responsible for breast development. So the fat tissue itself can make the estrogen levels higher. The other thing is that the girls that are overweight may be being exposed to more chemicals in their environment or more things in their food. When we think about the food supply, we personally are more worried about the antibiotics that animals are fed than the hormones that they may have been exposed to. Mostly because, for example, the growth hormone that cows and meat are fed does seem to degrade in our intestinal system. However, the antibiotics may not. And we know that antibiotics are used in the food supply when animals are not sick because antibiotics make animals grow faster, bigger, get larger, and go through puberty earlier. So our concern is that the antibiotics in the food supply may have the same effect on the girls. Now, that's not to say that if your child has an ear infection, you should not go ahead and give them antibiotics. That's pretty clear that if your child's doctor thinks they need them, they need them. But our concern is that the continual low-grade exposure day after day that girls might be getting in the food supply. So we are concerned about the use of antibiotics in the food supply. And obviously, antibiotics also can promote antibiotic resistance. So that's one main thing that we look for. But the other main thing we're concerned about in children's diet is the sugar. And with a special call out to sugar-sweetened drinks, kids are able to drink so many calories in juice and soda and other sweetened beverages, and they don't even realize that they're basically drinking liquid candy. And that's a main cause of obesity and a main concern of ours.
What about the diet drinks or the ones that use the artificial sweeteners?
Those are interesting. They aren't necessarily a direct source of calories, but they probably fool the body into thinking that you've just had a lot of sugar. And it looks like, certainly in adults, people who drink diet drinks have changes in their intestine and their appetite and are more likely to be obese. So we really think that water is the best thing. And starting early, and if your kids get used to drinking water early, then it's a lot easier than having an adult make that change. So we really, really suggest water is the best beverage, and it's free.
One of the things that we were talking about earlier are studies, and you mentioned Marsha's study. But there's also you mentioned in your book, the CYGNet, cohort of young girls, nutrition, environment, and transitions. Tell us about this study and what is this all about?
So this CYGNet study, CYGNet as in baby swans, was one of the studies that Julie and I have been involved with, and it's part of the larger breast cancer and the environment research program, which was sponsored by the National Institutes of Health. And these studies were based in Cincinnati, New York, and San Francisco Bay Area at Kaiser Permanente. And we have been studying a group of 1,200 girls. We started when they were 6 to 8 years of age, and they're now 14 to 16 years of age. And we've been following their pubertal development and also looking at their lifestyles, what they're eating, where they live, where they go to school, how active they are, and measuring levels of chemicals in their blood and their urine.
When you're talking about puberty and the changes that the girls go through, how does this all affect boys? Because boys also drink the sodas. They drink a lot of sugar. They eat a lot of stuff, and boys tend to eat a lot more junk than girls do. At least that's the stereotype we hear. So is there anything different that may affect boys while they're going through puberty?
So what's interesting with boys is that obesity or fat tissue may have a different effect in boys than in girls. So as I said before, fat tissue makes estrogen levels higher. In boys, that actually may delay puberty. So there's some evidence that the really obese boys are going through puberty a little bit later. But there is also other evidence that boys are starting earlier. So this is research that isn't quite clear yet, and the studies are ongoing. I don't think that the stereotype about who's exposed to food more is necessarily valid, because one thing that's really important to note is that in general, through adolescence, girls become a lot less physically active, and boys maintain their physical activity at a healthier level. So whether or not girls and boys are eating more or less junk food, boys are definitely more physically active, and that's more of a risk factor than for our girls, and we have to really encourage them to keep up their exercise levels.
We're visiting with Drs. Louise Greenspan and Juliana Deerdorf, talking about the new puberty, how to navigate early development in today's girls. Dr. Greenspan is a clinical pediatric endocrinologist, and she's also on the faculty at UC San Francisco. Dr. Deerdorf is on the faculty at UC Berkeley, and she's a licensed clinical psychologist. Now, when we were talking earlier about the breast development and can come as early as 7 or 8, how does this affect these girls with their peers? Because they're going to be different. And unless everybody else is going through the same thing, then they're going to be looked at as like, wow, you're different. We're going to stay away. And the opposite as well. If the young lady is not developed, they're going to look at her and treat her like a little girl?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. So we know that girls who go through puberty earlier are at greater risk for having body image issues, lower self-esteem, and also a host of kind of emotional and behavioral issues in adolescence, including anxiety, more risk for depression, and also early sexual initiation. So I think you're forecasting something that is showing in the literature, that if you view yourself as markedly different from your peers, particularly the earlier developers, it can lead you on a trajectory of kind of risk-taking and also risk for emotional outcomes. So So the good news is that this seems to be almost entirely modified or modulated by family. So if you have good, strong parental relationships, and also I think the school matters too. If you're in a very safe school environment and you have good scaffolding during this time, it seems like that really, really ameliorates a lot of the risk for some of these bad outcomes. So that's the good news, is that there are things that parents and teachers and key adults in a girl's life can do to help her navigate this transition a lot more, you know, with a lot more healthy behaviors and emotions.
On that word emotions, we're going to switch over to, some of the behavioral problems that some of these young ladies may have because of early puberty, and you address that in your book, what effects early puberty can have on a girl now and in the future. And you talk about early bloomers having behavioral problems like drinking, drug use, and even going through, you know, this is a Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
You know, and I think it's really important to note that, you know, that these things are not going to start at age 8 or 9 in a normal early developing girl. She's not going to jump straight from onset of breast development to having issues around substance use or sexuality. But what does start around that time, and we know that puberty drives some hormonal changes in the body, and that those hormonal changes really have an effect on the developing brain. And part of what that does is kind of light up the areas of the brain that have to do with emotions, and that's why you see more emotional lability in girls who are younger going through puberty early, and also kind of risk-taking. And that's long before some of the brain architecture has developed to control those emotions. So it's important for parents to understand what's going on during this time, that girls are going to be a little bit more emotionally reactive to their environment, and so it's going to be important to create environments that are highly consistent, really contained, and for parents to kind of act as the scaffolding, if you will, or the parts of the brain that aren't yet formed. They have to be that for their kids in order to help them talk through their emotions, to regulate them, and to learn how to deal with some of the implications of going through puberty early. Now, in terms of the long-term outcomes, we do know that early puberty is linked to breast cancer later in life, to cardiovascular disease, and to all-cause mortality, which basically means dying of anything. And while that sounds dire, I believe there are lots of things that can offset that risk. And Louise and I have touched on some of them, like healthy diet, nutrition, lifestyle, physical activity, limiting alcohol, those kinds of things.
Some people may say, well, gosh, it seems like females were given two joker cards when they were dealt their hand, because when they're experiencing change at a young age, they may be at a risk for something. And yet then when they reach menopause and then postmenopause, they're going to experience something else, especially the loss of the estrogen. And then they start getting, hormones or hormone shots, and then they may develop breast cancer.
Yeah, and there, you know, people have drawn some analogies between those two life transitions. I think one thing Louise and I note is that with women having babies, making choices to have babies later now, oftentimes a girl might be going through puberty at the same time her mom is starting to experience the very first signs of menopause. So there's lots of hormonal changes that are going on simultaneously in the family sometimes.
Well, we're visiting with Drs. Louise Greenspan and Julianne Deerdorf. The book is called The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. You mentioned, we've talked a little bit about boys, but in your book, you tell a little bit about boys, write a little bit about boys, talking about the fact that they experience puberty later. And, you know, there are a lot of myths out there, and there are a lot of stereotypes, and especially cultural stereotypes about puberty and about boys and girls. So is this one of the things that we hear about is the fact that girls mature a lot quicker than men? And in college and here, I teach just like you do here at the university. And I've noticed that, you know, the young ladies are a lot more mature than some of the young men. So let's talk a little bit about what you write in your book about puberty and boys.
So there's less known about boys. We do think that boys might be starting earlier, but there is less known. And there's also less known about the biologic downstream effects of early puberty on boys. I think the world's been fascinated or maybe alarmed more by girls' early puberty. And I think that speaks to the fact that we associate early puberty with early sexuality, and the two are not necessarily connected. Brain development-wise, boys and girls are still achieving that final maturation of the brain in their mid-20s. And Julie can speak a little bit more about this, but the new functional MRI imaging shows that both men and women, their brains are not finished maturing until their mid-20s, and that's regardless of gender.
Yeah, so I think it's really important for people in these kids, these developing youth's lives, be they parents or educators, to understand that the brain is very much under construction during adolescence and well into those young adult years, even, as you mentioned, when youth are in college.
In your book, we're speaking with Drs. Louise Greenspan, Dr. Deardorff, Julianne Deardorff, and we have about 2 minutes left in the program, but we're discussing the new puberty, how to navigate early development in today's girls. And ladies, I would imagine that this book, people can go out and look at Amazon or any of these other places, but do you have a specific website they can go to find out a little bit more about puberty in the young girls?
Yes, so our website is thenewpuberty.com, and you can also follow us on Twitter. And we do have links available on how to purchase the book and other information on the website.
Now, what about for the young girls? Can they go to that website also, or do you recommend that mom and the daughter go there and look at it together?
In terms of resources for the girls, we actually outline in our book several resources and several books that are on the market that are written in age-appropriate language for the girls. Our book is really written for adults and the adults in those girls' lives, but there are other books that are very well written that are written at different age levels for the girls.
Well, ladies, we want to thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Dr. Louise Greenspan and Dr. Julianne Deardorff, the authors of The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls. Once again, Dr. Greenspan is a clinical pediatric endocrinologist, and she's also on the faculty at UC San Francisco. Dr. Julianne Deardorff is a licensed clinical psychologist and also on the faculty at UC Berkeley. Ladies, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Thanks for having us.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Elvin Elvis. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.